Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everyone. It's Wednesday. It is a rainy day in Los Angeles, and this is Michelle Ann Johnson with Kickstart Your Consciousness, where I'll be providing information about spirituality, consciousness, and healing so that you can transcend doubt, limitation, and strengthen your connection to your own wisdom. Today, I'm going to be talking with Edwin Harkness Spina. He is an award-winning author and just very knowledgeable about a variety of subjects, and we're going to touch on as many of those subjects today as we can. Let me read a little bit about Ed. He's an award-winning author, speaker, and mystic. His first book, Mystic Warrior, won the Independent Publisher Book Award for Visionary Fiction and a Nautilus Silver Book Award for Fiction. Ed is a contributing author, along with Zig Ziglar, Brian Tracy, Joe Vitale, and others, to the bestseller 101 Great Ways to Improve Your Life. Ed is also the developer of Energy Center Clearing, which flushes low vibrational energies that lead to stress, fear, anger, and hatred from a person's being and replaces them with higher vibrational energies that lead to peace, balance, clarity, and healing. Ed offers practical, mystical techniques to improve people's lives and expand their minds. Previously, he was a venture capitalist, entrepreneur, software designer, and business consultant. Ed has an MBA from the University of Chicago and a BSE from Tufts University. Welcome, Edwin Harkness Spina. How are you?
Hi, Michelle. Great. I'm very happy to be here.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Let's talk a little bit about your book. You were generous enough to send it to me, and I read it in about 3 or 4 days, you know, just kind of as I would go to sleep or try to go to sleep. I had your book next to my nightstand, and it kept me up. It was just a very, very involving novel, very cool the way you mixed the thriller genre with spiritual themes. And I don't know of any other books that do that, but I'm sure certainly not quite as well as you did. So tell us a little bit why you wrote that book. What inspired you to write that book?
Okay, what I wanted to do was I wanted people to understand the mystic principles that I came to learn about, but I didn't want to write a textbook because there are already a million and one textbooks that with spiritual principles. So I decided to do it in the format of a fast-paced adventure story where the spiritual principles would be a key part of the story and people could learn about them and how these principles are being used in today's world without having to go to class, so to speak.
And had you written a book before?
No, I hadn't. I'd written business plans and marketing plans and joint venture agreements and business-related things, but I had never written before. And it's kind of funny because one of my mentors early on, she shuns any publicity whatsoever, but she's a real mystic master, and I attribute a lot of my growth and learning to her. And I call her Sophie after the Greek goddess of wisdom.
Yes.
When I was working with her, she told me that I was going to write a best-selling book. And I said, oh, that's news to me because I've never written a book before. Now, I haven't written a book, but subsequently I did at least write a book and it won some awards, though it hasn't been a bestseller yet.
Wow, that's really amazing. So when did you start your own journey down the mystical path?
Okay, back in 1992, I had no interest in any spirituality or anything like that. And I had a girlfriend who sent me to Blockbuster Video to get a movie to watch after dinner. And I went down to Blockbuster, and this was when they were acquiring all these stores, and so they hadn't had a chance to weed out all the non-mainstream material. And I had seen all the new releases, but right next to the counter was this video that looked very interesting. It said, Dick Sutphin's Past Life Regression. And I picked it up, and it said it would relax you and take you to this other state. And I said, all right, let's try this out. So I brought it back, and we watched the video, and on the screen was almost looked like a star field, like you see on Star Trek with the stars going by. It was very hypnotic. And then Dick Sutphin's voice is very, very deep and soothing. He put us into an altered state. And he said, okay, you're 15 years old. You know, go back to a lifetime that has relevance to this lifetime. You're 15 years old. What year is it? And I knew the answer. And he asked, what's your name? Where do you live? What's your job? What are you wearing? All these different questions. What country are you in? And I knew all the answers. So when he brought us back to conscious awareness, I wrote down everything. And understand, I had been a mathematician by training, and I was a businessman, so I had no airy-fairy metaphysical or spiritual background at all. I decided I needed to investigate this. And so I went to the bookstore and looked it all up and saw that everything matched exactly. And so I still wasn't ready to just say, oh, I had a past life recall. I had to investigate further. But what I did know is that the information I had tapped into did not come from anything I had ever studied or read about before. And so I knew that my education was incomplete.
Mm-hmm.
But even though I had studied math and physics and that all the sciences and everything that I had studied, there were certain laws that I didn't know about. And that's what prompted me to go on my journey to study metaphysics, reincarnation, karma, and all under the umbrella of mysticism.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how I began.
Mm-hmm. And so now, did you start your study with just reading? You mentioned that you had a mentor. It looks like you maybe had a series of mentors. How did those people and situations come into your life?
Okay, well, by the law of attraction, I had this intense desire to know how the world operated, how it really worked.
Mm-hmm.
And by this intense desire, sparked the interest of my first mentor, the Sophie that I mentioned before.
Mm-hmm.
She kind of took me under her wing and opened me up and showed me more things that were beyond the world as I knew it.
Mm-hmm.
As an example, one time I was in her office, she pulled a jar of quartz crystals down from her shelf and said, pick four. And I picked four crystals out of her jar, which, you know, maybe a couple dozen, each just garden variety quartz crystals, single terminated. And she said, go home tonight and put them all in the four corners of your bed, pointing toward your head. So I did that, and at night I could feel energy coming from the points of the crystals directly to my third eye, and it was almost making me laugh because wherever I moved on the bed, it was as if these four little rays of energy were following me all over. The next day she called and said, okay, turn crystals around so they're pointing toward your feet. So I did that, and the same thing happened the next night. The third day she called me and said, okay, bring them in. So I gathered up the crystals, and I was amazed that the crystals were now magnetized. If I pointed the terminations in the same direction, I could roll them across the table because they would repel. If I flipped them around, they would attract like a bar magnet.
Wow.
Not as strong as a physical bar magnet, but that's made of metal. And I had never seen quartz magnetized before. So that was like one of the kind of things that she said were, wait, the physical laws that we were taught are incomplete. You know, there's much more going on than people know about.
Yeah. Wow. So, you know, I think I had a similar reaction as I started my own investigation into mysticism, I guess you can call it, was a little bit of anger that there was this whole world out there that, you know, most of us had not been taught about, had not been spoken about. You know, it's mainly ridiculed and I think it's changing. It's definitely changing. Was that your response as well? Just kind of this, you know, wow, what, you know, we were taught the reading, writing, arithmetic, but the things that really
nice.
Seem to matter, the part of us that really seems to, you know, really run the show, we're not shown.
No one tells us about this. It's
mm-hmm.
funny. There's a philosopher, Schopenhauer, who summarizes what you just said. And when any time a new idea comes along, first it's ignored, then it's ridiculed, then it's vehemently opposed, then it's accepted as true.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of the stage we're at now, where people, initially they ridicule these new agers and this energy and this, but now it's becoming more and more mainstream, and it will soon become accepted as it's obvious.
Yeah, yeah.
Evidence.
It's an amazing time we're living in. I'm really excited to be a part of this whole thing. Yeah, and your book touches on so many themes. You know, it touches on remote viewing, and you said the chakra system and telepathy. Let's talk a little bit about telepathy because I'm interested in this topic. Is that something that you've experimented with?
Yes, and my mentor Sophie, I mentioned she's a real mystic master. She would teach me, and my time with her was very short. I only had a few months with her, and during that time, she would just tell me what to do. And then she said, "Look, we don't have much time," and I didn't know why or what the reasons were. But she just, we have very little time, so basically just listen to me and pay attention. And I would follow her advice and do whatever she asked me to do. And by the end of, within a few months of working with her, most of my instruction with her was mental, was telepathic.
Mm.
She would say, "Call me at 9 o'clock. And at 8:45, I'd be in my recliner or laying in my bed, and I would feel the tingling in my third eye, on the center of my forehead, and I would feel it was her. And I would have a conversation with her, just like we're having right now. And then she would answer my questions, and then at the end of it, she'd say, "Okay, are you going to call me at 9? And I'd say, no need, you answered all my questions." She'd say, "Okay, call me tomorrow." And that would be it. So,
wow.
Yeah, so direct experience with that. It's a lot
That's
easier
amazing.
To talk with a mystic master than the average person on the street.
mm-hmm. Now, this is then something that we can all do, and it really just takes someone to teach us how to use that faculty.
Mainly, it's knowing it's possible is the first step, awareness.
Mm-hmm.
Next thing is to have your energy centers cleared out. The telepathic center is associated with the third eye and Eastern thought. Also the pineal gland, the third eye of Eastern thought and the crown chakra are the two sixth and seventh chakras in the Eastern schools. These are associated with the pituitary gland and the pineal gland in our bodies. It's all part of the autonomic nervous system. And these two glands are the two most important glands for awakening your psychic ability or, more generally, your inner senses. So you want to have these awakened and first know that it's possible. Next, you want to have these awakened, and usually you can awaken them by energetically or by certain sacred vowel sounds that you learn from a mystery school or one of the mystical societies. But once these are activated, then everyone can tune in and begin, not so easily conversing, but getting messages from your own higher self is the first step.
Mm-hmm.
That's very valuable for anyone.
Let's talk about these mystery schools. Now, I'm sure a lot of people are now hearing about, things such as Skull and Bones and the Illuminati and all of these things, which is making the idea of mystery schools. Again, it's a little bit demonized and ridiculed, I think, but again, I think the tide will turn. Talk a little bit about your experience with any of these schools, or have you been just kind of working with singular people as opposed to like an entire institution?
Okay, the one institution that I'm a member of is the Rosicrucian Order,
mm-hmm.
and that's an ancient mystery school that goes back to Egypt, where they give you a course of study. You sign up and you get monographs every month. You start off with 4 monographs a month, and every once a week you should read your monograph, and often there's exercises in there. And to me, this is still the most complete course of study for understanding the mystic principles that animate your life and that create all of reality that I've come across. So that was the fundamental basis that I began studying back after I had that past life regression. I decided I need to study this, and next thing I knew I saw an advertisement for the Rosicrucian Order, so I joined and I've maintained my membership. That's
mm-hmm.
one. Now, the other thing you touched upon was you said the Illuminati and Skull and Bones. Not every school is necessarily for the betterment of mankind. Some of them are set up for selfish reasons. And most people, there's a whole body of information out there, especially on the Internet, about this Illuminati and how they're this negative force. Now, literally, Illuminati means the enlightened ones. So this doesn't necessarily have to be only negative. It can be also in the original sense of them, these enlightened beings that come to Earth, like Jesus, Buddha, Moses, Muhammad, that teach people how to live the spiritual principles and how to improve their life. But most of the time, people, when they refer to Illuminati, they're referring to these negative organizations, which are more self-aggrandizing, that want to improve their own life, and not necessarily the lives of the average man and woman on the street.
And so the Rosicrucian Order, is this like a real, do they have like buildings where you go and meet, or is it pretty much, like an online thing? Like, tell me a little bit about how you guys, what the organization is like.
Okay, the organization is a worldwide organization. The North American headquarters is in San Jose, California.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't have to ever go and meet another Rosicrucian or another mystic if you don't want. You'd go to their website, rosicrucianorder.org, the ancient mystical order Rosicrucius, sometimes called AMORC, A-M-O-R-C, and you can sign up for this kind of correspondence course. And it's a nonprofit organization. They're not there to make money. It's basically to support the information that's going out to you.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it may happen like it did with me. After I studied this for a few years, I decided I wanted to meet other spiritually oriented people, and so I began going. They have chapters that meet in cities all over the world. There's some right here. There's one in Los Angeles. There's another one in Orange County. And so you can go and meet the people in person, and they have different convocations and where they talk, and you have fellowship with fellow mystics and people that are on the spiritual path. So you don't have to meet other people, or you can just study the principles on your own. But either way, both of them help to integrate the principles and make them a part of your life.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And is there this battle of good and evil that you depict in the book?
Well, just on the physical world, there are physical battles and legal battles and political battles. On the higher world, there are also spiritual battles. And depending on what kind of level you're at, there are different battles taking place. In some cases, there's a battle over what is the world paradigm. Is it a world based on sharing and community and the age of brotherhood of man, or is it a battle where there's of survival, a fear-based battle? You know, that's kind of the world paradigm that's taking place right now, and it's taking place on a higher plane. It's not just on the physical plane. And the higher planes also, the astral planes, which are kind of one level up from our physical plane, that sometimes you'll have physical battles. These are kind of things that happen when you're in your dreams. You may come across people who have different opinions of you or may actually want to hurt you or stop you. The good news is that the one with the higher vibration always wins in any of these confrontations, and the one with the higher vibration is the one that's ultimately going to merge into the oneness and the unity more quickly. So all things being equal, good as defined by merging and community and going toward the oneness, will win over the negative-oriented ones.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And have you had your own battles with either physical or physical beings or, astral beings or, that you are aware of? Or do you consider yourself a warrior?
Well, in some cases, yes. When I wrote my book, I was more of a warrior, more of the mystic warrior type. As I've developed more and more energy, that the duality in these battles, even on the spiritual planes, has become less and less a part of my life.
Mm-hmm.
As I go to a higher level where the duality does not exist, where it's more a oneness,
mm-hmm.
and you just see two opposing opinions as two sides of the same coin. You don't have to engage in those battles. You kind of transcend them, go to higher levels.
Mm. That's kind of cool. Let's talk a little bit more about that. And the concept of duality is one that I'm very fascinated with. And in my meditations, I feel that I've gone to states that are above above duality, and it's a very liberating experience, even if it's temporary. But just kind of popping yourself out of these realms where duality is so entrenched is a mind expanding and consciousness expanding experience. So talk a little bit about this realm of duality that we live in, and then the realm of non-duality or oneness, so that we can kind of get a sense of where we're going.
Okay, well, everything happens in, everything is energy, is one of the fundamental mystic principles. Everything is energy, and you distinguish one substance from another by its rate of vibration. As you keep going up higher and higher vibrations, you're going to higher and higher levels. Sometimes mystics refer to this as the cosmic keyboard. Not all of these energy levels are perceivable to the human senses. For example, even our sense of hearing is limited to about 20 hertz to 20,000 hertz. And our sense of vision, we're limited by the colors of the rainbow, but we also know that there are other vibrations which also exist below the red, the infrared, and above the violet, the ultraviolet, and X-rays, and gamma rays. So all these vibrations exist. And along this path, we have our physical body. As we go higher in the vibration, we come across our emotional bodies, and we have mental bodies, and everyone who's incarnate on Earth has all these different bodies. This is kind of your esoteric anatomy. And at the plane of the mind, we make judgments as to what's good, what's bad, and it's, in many cases, just a subjective opinion. So in order to transcend that state where he's good or she's bad, she's right, he's wrong, this whole sense of duality, you have to go beyond the level of the mind to a higher state of vibration. And that's the state where people start having these unity experiences and merge with the oneness, where they feel a part of the entire universe. So that's the state where, you know, ultimately we're all going, at least to be able to tap into that regularly and then come back to the world of duality and spread our light and energy to other people to help wake them up so that they also want to embark on this path, this spiritual or mystic path.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I recently had an experience, I would call it a healing that I received, where I was working with the concept of control, the polarity of control versus, I guess, cooperation or responsibility. You know, some people call it service to self versus service to others. And I was looking at this energy of, you know, control and this, you know, destruction energy, and really wanting to understand that and integrate that, look at it, you know, as part of myself as well, instead of, I think, what most of us do and what I used to do, which is, you know, externalize it. And that is really, I think, a large part of this judgment energy. And I had this really cool experience where I was really shown that this control or this destruction energy is a part of our, I guess you would call it, our God creation power, that it's just the other side of the... of creation energy. You know, we create and we also destroy, and in actuality we need that yin and yang. It's just that unfortunately some people have been caught in the control or destruction paradigm, and it's like they've forgotten that there is another side of that. And that was really powerful for me. It really took me out of that judgment, because I realized that we all need that experience. We all, it's like, you know, we don't learn by someone telling us. We learn by doing. We have to actually experience something in order for it to really be knowledge, to become knowledge, to become integrated. And so we had to, in our experience, you know, coming down, you know, from this God being and then descending down into this dense plane that we're in now, we've all had to experience what it's like to control another person, or what it's like to destroy another person, what it's like to inflict pain and inflict suffering, so that we know why not to do that,
right.
What's on the other side of that. And just unfortunately, some of these beings that are controlling the planet, you know, causing a lot of problems, they've gotten stuck in this loop, and they've forgotten what the real journey is about. What do you think about that? Have you had similar experiences or similar revelations?
Yes, that is funny, because that was one of the questions I asked. I had attended this lecture where this long-term mystic had spoke, and he had spoke about we should be, I think he said, use the word spiritual warriors. And he was looking right at me when he said it. And so I was wondering, maybe he knew I wrote the book Mystic Warrior. And I wanted to talk with him, and very soon after, during a lunch break, here he is walking right by my table with his tray, and I said, oh, please join me. I want to ask you all about this. And so he came and sat with me, and I asked him, did you know I was the author of Mystic Warrior? And he says, no, I didn't. I said, well, you were looking right at me. He goes, well, you know, when I'm up there lecturing, it's not me who's lecturing. You know, it's the master within, his divine aspect, and Spark tells him what to say, and he's sometimes with very little conscious awareness of what he's actually saying. So I said, well, I have a question for you, and it goes right to your question. What if you knew that some person was inflicting harm on others? You know, is it okay for you to then go and, you know, basically beat up spiritually this other person? And he said, you know, well, how would you know he's inflicting harm? And I said, well, you know, I see it, and I know. He goes, well, there's so many factors that go into that interaction. The best thing you can do is to send universal love, unconditional love to all the parties and hope for the best. And I said, well, what if you know that they're deliberately trying to harm this person? You know, is it better to try to control the person who's controlling them? And it's kind of like that Hollywood blockbuster crisis where Superman has to decide, does he save Lois Lane or does he save the world?
Mm-hmm.
Asking, does he do something negative to the person who's doing something negative? Is that positive, or does he? How does he handle this?
Mm-hmm.
Finally, he stopped because he knew every question, every answer he gave. I kept asking the same. But what if this? But what if this? And he said, "Who is directing you?" And then I sat back and then I realized what he was talking about. You know, he's directed by his master within, and that's the objective. That's where we all want to get to. Where we're directed by our innermost self, by our divine aspect, and we know what action to take in any situation. We know whether to restrain someone from inflicting harm on himself or herself or others. We know whether to let it go and not to get involved necessarily. That's the objective of every mystic, is to tune into your own innermost self and listen to the master within, or your higher self, your inner light, whatever name you want to give it, the divine aspect, and then you know how to act in any situation. So that goes right to your question, you know, how do you handle all this controlling? Is it better to control, not control? There's no one answer. You have to go within and make sense of the divine guidance that you're being given.
Yeah, and it's, I can see how, I mean, it's difficult to, you know, kind of sit back and watch things happen objectively. It's very difficult.
Well, here's another viewpoint of this. And from our perspective on the third density, third, you know, physical world that we're living in, there's good and there's evil. There's people that are hurting others. There's people that are doing this. There's people that are implementing policies and laws and wars and things that are not, obviously not in the interest of a lot of other people. And you look at this, and you think this is, you know, a world of good and evil. But when you go to a higher plane and you look and you recognize all is one, there's a reason for this. If there wasn't these negative people that are, or I use the word in a non-judgmental, it's somewhat judgmental, but in a negative way, in a way that's not benefiting a lot of humankind, when you see them doing this, you realize that by them doing this negative, it's forcing people to wake up, to act, to do something. So in many cases, these negative actions that we see in the world are a stimulus to positive development.
Mm-hmm.
Many people, even Eckhart Tolle, many people, the only reason they ever awaken is from intense suffering.
Mm-hmm.
People don't necessarily, you know, 90% of people are more motivated to avoid pain and fear than they are to reach for some higher learning. So pain is a very good teacher. And these negative beings, some of them may have contracted ahead of time, saying, look, I'm going to be a bad guy in this lifetime because people need to wake up. And if I don't wake them up, the world will just be static and we'll just sit around with no progress.
Mm-hmm.
So that this interaction of good and evil, as we label it on this plane, is necessary for people to want to progress and to kind of have the friction and develop your spiritual muscles so that you do go to higher realms. So you have the desire and the impetus to develop yourself spiritually.
Yes. And I would imagine that would be a very unsatisfactory answer for a lot of people. You know, the as an answer to why isn't evil necessary, or why do we have evil? I think a lot of people, at least the responses that I've gotten is, well, that just proves that there is no God, because if there was a God, he wouldn't allow these evil things to happen.
Well, but...
And I think, wow, that's interesting. Yeah. Go ahead.
It's kind of interesting, but in the mystic world, all is one. That's one of the fundamental principles. All is one. And this oneness, this all that is, this is what the name that we normally give to God. And this is entirely consistent with all religions, although different religions have interpreted this in different ways. But when you think of every religion tells you that, you know, three attributes of God, they always say all-powerful, all-knowing, and all-present. And just taking the last one, all-present, if God is all-present, then there's only one logical situation where this can be true. That is if God is one, if that God is, there's only the one thing. There's nothing outside of the one thing, because if there was something outside of the one thing, then that would mean that God is not there.
Mm-hmm.
And there can't be a division of the one thing in any way, from good or evil or any other way, because then you'd ask the question, what is dividing the one thing? Because then whatever's dividing the one thing is outside of the one thing, so that there's no possible way. The only logical consistency is that the one thing is God, is the one, is the not the universe, but sometimes referred to as the cosmic. This is the one thing. So this one thing, everything that takes place in our universe and our individual consciousness, all has to happen within the one thing. There's no other place for it to be,
mm-hmm.
but in the one thing. Now, here's an analogy that I sometimes, actually I'll do this tomorrow at an event I'm going to have. I hold up my book, Mystic Warrior, and I say, here's the book, Mystic Warrior. You know, before this book existed in physical form, it existed in my head, in my mind. You know, in one sense, I am the God of this universe. I created this entire universe. So this universe is within me. Now, one of the characters in my book, Alec Thorne, he also exists within me. He's within me. He's in my mind. I created him. Now, people that read my book, like you, Alec Thorne has taken on somewhat of an independent existence. If I were to ask you, how would Alec Thorne react in this situation, you would be able to tell me because you know what his personality and what he's like. So Alec Thorne has an independent existence, and yet what animates Alec Thorne is me. I'm the divine spark that gave him life. So in that sense,
I think his cell phone has died, and we're just going to wait a few seconds for him to come back online. He did warn me that that this might happen, so we're just going to take a few seconds to have him come back on the line. And a lot of what he's talking about right now is can be found in a book called The Kabbalion, and it's a really, really great little manual written by the three initiates based on the work of Hermes Trismegistus. And again, it's called The Kabbalion, and really, really great information. That's really where the law of attraction comes from. It's one of these tenets. I think there are about maybe 7 to 10 really great laws. There's the law of correspondence. There's the law of vibration. There's the law of cause and effect, of which karma is one. So if anyone's really interested in what he's talking about right now, I would really, really suggest looking up The Kabbalion. And yeah, so really great information. Oh, here he is right now. Let's see if I can get him back on the line. Hey, Ed, is that you?
Yes, that's me. Where did I get cut off? I looked up and all of a sudden the phone was dead.
I know. Well, you got cut off. You were still talking about the Alec Thorne, that he's an independent creation, but he's still part of you as the creator.
Right. Yeah, the point I was trying to make is Alec Thorne used to exist within me, and now he has almost an independent existence. That you know who Alec Thorne is, you can predict how he would act in certain circumstances from understanding his personality, but the force that animates Alec Thorne comes from me. I am the divine aspect inside of Alec Thorne. So understanding this, he is in me, because that's where he was conceived in my mind, and I am in him, because that's what animates him now out in his world, the world of Alec Thorne, the world of Mystic Warrior. That gives us an understanding of one of the quotes that Jesus has made when he was referring to God or the Father. He would say, he is in me, and I am in him. And people mm-hmm. think, oh, that's because he's God or he's the Son of God, he's special. But no, he's telling you a mystic truism that's true for every man, woman, and child on earth.
Mm-hmm.
God is in you, and you are in him. You are in God because there's no other place other than to be within God, and he is in you. He is the one is in you that gave you the spark that animates your entire life.
Mm-hmm.
And when you understand that, you understand that that's the divine spark that's at the heart of every single individual on earth here is the same one divine spark. So it's the same consciousness. It's ultimately the same soul which has created everything, everyone on earth, from the Hitlers to the Jesuses, from the Buddhas to the Saddam Hussein or any other evil person you could think of. They all are animated by that same divine spark which exists within the oneness.
And that's, and I think that that's where people really get hung. They can't conceive that God, quote unquote God, could be Hitler, or would manifest itself. And it's interesting. And I think when you were cut off, I was talking about the book, The Kabbalion. Have you read that book?
Yes, Kabbalion is one of my favorite authors.
It's really, really fantastic, and they talk a more about that concept of, all of the all in one and the one in the all. And sometimes, I think the New Agers, I put that in quotes, the New Agers, of which I consider myself one.
Right.
But sometimes I think that they've kind of gotten off track by saying that there's a difference between saying that we are God, because we are, as you were giving that analogy of, Alec Thorne is, he has that divine spark. He is you and you are he, but we are not the all. And
right.
I just think that we are, it's important for us to make that distinction that, yes, we are God beings, but we are not God.
That's very good, because I've had this very same argument with someone where they think, no, we are God. We are No. We are single point of awareness in the oneness. We are God through our own perspective. We are limited to our own perspective. We are not the all, just as you said, very eloquently. That's a very good point.
Yeah.
And funny, when you mentioned the Kybalion, the official title, the author is the Three Initiates. But behind the scenes, the person who wrote that is William Walker Atkinson, who wrote many books at the beginning of the early 1900s. He wrote under many pen names. William Walker Atkinson is his given name, but he also wrote under Yogi Ramacharaka, Swami Panchadisi, and the Three Initiates. And those books are among my favorite books, 14 Lessons in Occult Philosophy, 14 Lessons in Yogi Philosophy. Yogis are just the mystics of the Hindu and Buddhist religions. So
yeah.
When he says 14 lessons in yogi philosophy, he's telling you 14 lessons in mysticism. It's, it's just pure wisdom. And it's wisdom that never goes out of style.
Yeah, really, really great stuff. So let's talk about, so now we get to the energy centers. And, again, the importance of clearing the energy centers. And talk about how all that, the negativity, the fear, the stress of our daily life, how that impacts us energetically.
Okay. As a human being, you understand you're more than just the physical body. You have, from your esoteric anatomy, you have emotional bodies, mental bodies, and spiritual bodies, which are of higher and higher frequency. Within each of these frequency bands, the lower vibrational energies are the ones that are considered negative, the fear-based ones that lead to anger, hatred. Those are the lower ones. The higher vibrational ones are the ones that lead to happiness, joy, and ultimately bliss. So you want to be The other thing that physics teaches us is that higher vibrational energy is more powerful than lower vibrational energy. It's simple, it's directly proportional, E equals H nu, meaning nu is the frequency, the higher frequency is more powerful. So you can use higher frequency energies to transmute or eliminate lower frequency energies. So by pumping your body up with higher frequency energies, you can eliminate, at least temporarily, the fear, anger, lower energies that lead to the, you know, disharmony and negative consequences, depression. You want to get rid of those things. Now, as a human being living on in the universe with all these higher bodies, the way that the higher bodies communicate with the physical body is through your energy centers. In the Eastern schools, we talk about the chakras, the seven major chakras which run along your spine. In the Western schools, we talk about energy centers, and they're usually the glands or organs that actually animate your body. We talked before about the pineal and the pituitary gland in the center of your brain. Those are two energy centers, and in the Western school, there are 12 energy centers. So it makes sense if you want to get the more subtle vibrational frequencies from your higher energy bodies and bring them to your earth, bring them to your physical body, you want to have your energy centers clear. In addition, and that's what my energy center clearing does, it clears out the energy centers and from a Western mystic perspective. And in addition, it flushes the energy bodies which have accumulated the different emotions and thoughts that you've been thinking. And we know from the law of attraction, if you're thinking thoughts that are negative or unproductive, I should say, to try to make it less judgmental, if you're thinking thoughts that are unproductive, I'm not worthy, I'm not able to do this, you're going to attract more thoughts of a similar vibration, and your energy body, your mental body, and your emotional bodies are going to be filled with these same negative thoughts. So the energy center clearing also flushes all those thoughts from your energy bodies and transmutes them. So you effectively start from a blank slate. You don't forget who you are or anything like that, but you're clear again on what's going on, and you can start again from your own innermost self, thinking positive thoughts or productive thoughts that are going to where you send them out to the universe, and you'll attract more good positive thoughts from the universe at large. So, you know, that's two-phase approach. Clear out your energy center so that you can better receive and the inputs from your higher energy bodies, and flush out the actual energy bodies, so that you're not saddled with what happened in the past. You can go about creating and being yourself.
Mm-hmm. I'm being prodded to ask you what your own transformation has been like. Who were you before 1992, and who do you feel you are now?
Okay, well, I'm 1992. I was a businessman who thought, you know, who wanted to go out, make millions of dollars, and hang around with Donald Trump and Bill Gates and the wealthiest people on the earth. And I was a entrepreneur, a venture capitalist, and I decided I wasn't fast enough. I wanted to be an entrepreneur and build the next, you know, Apple computer. And I was more motivated toward material success. And then after I awoken and then started going on the spiritual path, I gradually became less and less involved with the more traditional business world and more involved in my own personal studies and selling my books and CDs. So it's been a gradual evolution, and I haven't forgotten what it's like to live interact in the physical and the business world. But it doesn't have as much interest for me anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the questions that I asked actually happened with me is, as I was making this transition, initially I was afraid to tell people I was interested in these spiritual subjects because I thought it might hurt my business career.
Mm.
And as I became more and more comfortable with who I am in my own new skin, I would let more and more things come out. And I discovered that the law of attraction, people that you attract are the ones that want to know about these subjects. And so it was a pretty smooth transition. I didn't suffer from the ridicule or that people would, if I made an abrupt jump from being businessman to spiritual teacher.
Mm-hmm.
But it happened naturally. And And what I discover is people want to know this. This is really what everyone wants. So in essence, this is to me, the only path that makes any sense.
Mm-hmm.
I've had many friends who've had near-death experiences, and the one guy, when he came back, the doctor said to him, he says, you know, Bill, everyone says that they're back again, that they're going to spend more time with their family, they're going to spend more time loving people and this. He says, hardly ever do I hear anyone say, wow, I wish I just spent another couple hours in the office. That's really what have made my life worthwhile.
It's
so obvious.
Yes. Yes. So, what's really important for our growth and evolution?
This is kind of a funny little side story, but that same fellow, Bill, he was from Tampa and I was from Fort Lauderdale, and we had a project in Puerto Rico that we would go down and interact. And when he had a near-death experience, he first was afraid to talk to people about it. But then when I explained it in the terms of the different planes and that it was a normal thing, he opened up and he started telling people about it. And we were in Puerto Rico at a restaurant, and this other fellow, our local agent, Pepe, was down there. So Pepe was sitting in one seat, and Bill was in the next seat, and I was sitting, and this other fellow, Juan, who worked for American Airlines, it was down there in Puerto Rico. And Bill starts talking to Pepe to tell him he had a near-death experience. Pepe said, you had a near-death experience? I had a near-death experience. And they were comparing notes of going to the white light and that. And then I went to talk to someone else at the other end of the restaurant. And then when I came back, Juan was also talking to them. He had also had a near-death experience when he was surfing.
Wow.
So what were the odds in Puerto Rico that three people, none of them knew each other except through me, all had near-death experiences and are all sitting at the end of this bar in a restaurant.
Wow.
Comparing notes on their near-death experiences.
Wow.
So that's, again, the law of attraction. And even though I haven't had a near-death experience from my mystical studies, I've had some of the same kinds of experience, that unity experience where you're beyond duality, and the vibration that you put out automatically attracts others that have that.
Mm-hmm.
And people with near-death experiences, many of them, they go from a regular traditional life, and then suddenly they have this near-death experience, and they don't know how the two interact. They know that this is one world, and it seems to be real, but how does it fit in with their regular life? And to different groups that I've been to, I say, hey, this is what you need to do. Study the mystic principles. This will take you, and you'll see it's a continuum of experience to the near-death experience in the
mm-hmm.
physical world. So,
right. It's just like a portal opening, you know, and we can kind of see into the other dimensions that are really here with us all the time. We just, like the color spectrum you talked about, we just are not our perception doesn't allow us most of the time to tune into those frequencies.
Right. Well, that's it. In the course of studying, doing these mystic exercises and trying to attune with the oneness with the all that is, with the God, with the Master within, with the ultimate source of creativity and inspiration, you will gradually awaken your psychic abilities. So
mm-hmm.
on a continuous path, some people who have somewhat more awakened psychic abilities or very good intuition, it's just an awakening of their senses. And if they continue on, I can't speak from not the self-realized master, but from the people that who have been there, they've all described it as that's the ultimate, and your psychic senses do awaken, but that shouldn't be the motivation for doing this. The motivation should be that coming from within the deepest reaches of the soul to reunite with the oneness, to be connected with everything, with all
mm-hmm.
there is.
Mm-hmm. Is there a sense, I remember in the Kabbalion, talked about the importance of keeping these mystery schools or these ideas out of the hands of, you know, basically do not, you know, cast your pearls to swine, that idea.
Right.
Do you feel a need to keep some of these principles secret so that, you know, they don't get into the wrong hands? Or do you just feel that, you know, it's just put it out there and people will either resonate with it or they won't, or if they do use these principles for self-serving purposes, then that's all part of the grand plan.
Well, I think that's true. It's all part of the grand plan. But, for example, in the Rosicrucian Order, some of the information is somewhat secret. You have to join the order in order to get access to that. And that's not so much that they're withholding the information from the general public, but they want to disclose it when the person is ready to receive it, and they're not going to turn their nose up or be freaked out that this is not how the world operates. So their plan is a gradual awakening plan, and I respect that. So I don't disclose anything I've learned from them that I'm not allowed to.
Mm-hmm.
But in general, I go with your other approaches. If it's not something that's a secret, I readily give energy to people and tell them how things work. And those that do resonate with it will appreciate it and get it. Those who don't will will walk away, and they will not be attracted.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's the way it is with everyone. Those people, you're going to, the law of attraction, you're going to attract people and experiences and things that resonate with who you are and what you're radiating. So if you're radiating love and unity and higher vibrational energies, the people that are fearful and negative, they'll actually be repelled from you. So your world is not going to be the same fear-based world that you see on the daily news. It's going to be a much more calm, harmonious place.
Mm-hmm.
Even though we're all in the same oneness, even how you perceive the same situation will be different when you have this more whole mindset.
Mm-hmm. So I'm so curious, as you keep saying how this isn't how the world really works. Now, I know, you know, I have a lot of information myself about how the world works. Is there anything that you can share with us that, you know, is not, forbidden information from the Rosicrucian Order? And I'm sure you touched a little bit or a lot on in your book about how the world really works and the different, basically the powers that we all have, the latent powers that we all have. But what is this that you're alluding to, this, you know, it's not how the world works?
Okay, well, there's different levels or understandings of how the world works. How the world works from a mystic scientific perspective, that's readily available. If you read any of William Walker Atkinson's books, he's a master at describing it. So that's widely disseminated, and people don't necessarily read those books. It's such a small percentage of the population is actually interested. And as we step down into the kind of the physical world and the political battles and things that are going on, I think that's what you're referring to.
Mm-hmm.
How the world works is the people you see on TV making speeches and giving and passing laws, those are not the people who are in charge.
Mm-hmm.
People in charge are operating behind the scenes, dictating in some cases who gets elected, in some cases, you know, what the program's going to be.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a famous English prime minister from the 1850s or so, Benjamin Disraeli,
mm-hmm.
who has a famous quote, you know, the world is governed by very different personages than most people think, to those who are not privy to what's going on behind the scenes. And that was true back in the 1850s. It's just as true today.
Mm-hmm.
So and again, when I talk about the different battles, the spiritual and political battles, some of these battles go on behind the scenes, and they're never on the CNN and ABC news.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of things on there that have nothing to do with what's going on.
Yeah, it's really interesting. It seems like it's deteriorating even more. The facade that we see on television, it seems like it's become so outlandishly apparent that it's all smoke and mirrors. It's all a big smoke screen. I don't know if they're aware of how much they're giving it away, but I don't know if that's part of the desperation that they're feeling, you know, because things are kind of slipping out of their control. But it to me, it just seems so apparent that, wow, it's like the train is just coming off the tracks right now.
Right. That's exactly how it should be. You have to recognize everything is in a divine plan. Everything is divinely orchestrated. And what you see as desperation is, in fact, you know, the fact that people are waking up and say, wait a second, that's not true. You know, I just heard that political debate. That's not what he said. I don't need someone to tell me what to think or how to think. That's ridiculous.
Yeah.
And I spent a lot less, well, I spent almost no time watching television because, to me, it's more of a comedy show. It's more like pro wrestling than it is, you know, informed debate.
Yes, that's a great analogy.
And it's the same with pro wrestling. You see this guy, I hate that guy, and, oh, I'm going to kill you. And then afterwards, if you saw behind the scenes, you'd see they're sitting at the restaurant having dinner, and they say, oh, yeah, when you broke that chair over my head, that did smart a little bit, but I think we gave him a good show.
Yeah.
It's the same thing with politics today. It is mostly, in my crude thing, it's a joke.
That's a great analogy. I'm going to use that one. Thank you. So we have a couple of minutes left. I want to tell people how to find you. Let's see. We've got mysticwarrior.us, mysticwarrior.us. Is there any other way that you'd like people to contact you?
Yes. Well, mysticwarrior.us is my main website, and that talks about my book. And if you, on the left-hand side of the navigation links, if you click on Energy Clearing, then you'll go to my other website, energycenterclearing.com. And that talks more specifically about clearing out your energy centers and clearing your energy bodies. And if you go to either one of them, you can sign up for my newsletter. If you go to energycenterclearing.com, you'll get a more recent series of newsletters. So I would recommend you go there. It's free, and you'll get information on overcoming fear, stress, anger, disidentifying from your emotions, being yourself, listening to your inner master, and the last lesson in that series is escaping the matrix, which is the metaphor for the mystic path of enlightenment, escaping the matrix, this world that we perceive, to go to the reality, which is beyond thought, at a higher vibrational level. So, you know, people can go there and get lots of free information, and hopefully they'll be on the same path that we're on, same spiritual path that leads to joy, bliss, oneness, clarity, and healing.
And it's really exciting and tremendously fulfilling, and every day is a new day. Every day is, you know, it's never a dull moment, at least for me. I don't know what your experience has been, but just the 3 years that I've been on this path, it's just been a tremendous transformational experience. So it's been really cool. So thank you so much, Ed. I'm going to give you a call right after we hang up to debrief you. So thank you so much for talking with me. I really enjoyed our conversation.
You're very welcome. This is a great time here, Michelle.
Cool. And just to put it out to everybody, doing an event myself on October 24th called The Future of Alternative Health. October 24th here in Los Angeles at the DoubleTree Hotel in Commerce from 1 to 6 p.m. Go to my website, consciouskickstart.com. That's consciouskickstart.com. Go to the events page. Join us. We've got so many great people that are going to be there. Just added to the list of speakers is Dr. Russ Bianchi, world-renowned scientist and formulator of something called Giga. And he's going to be talking about the Moringa tree, which is apparently just the world's greatest superfood. So it's going to be really cool. We're going to be talking about energy protection and forgiveness and just sound healing, just all kinds of different stuff. And I will be there hosting and moderating a panel discussion, as well as all the presentations by all of my gifted and talented speakers. So come on down, and it's going to be a really great time. October 24th, go to Conscious Kickstart and register and join us. Thank you so much. All right, guys, until next week, be well, be blessed, and I will talk to you very soon. Bye-bye. Bye, Ed.
Bye-bye.